Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name is Jim Rugg.
I'm Ed Piskor.
What do you have going on, Ed?
Ah, man, I'm serializing my Red Room comic, patreon.com/EdPiskor. $3 gets you the archive, and every Tuesday I slide out new strips to my outlaw, splatterpunk, gory, violent, bloody comic. An example would be this little scene that I drew recently, man, where a person is getting their fingernails ripped off on a webcam while people are pledging Bitcoin money in the webcam stream to make that nasty shit happen.
Man, we talk a lot about outlaw comics and a lot about like 80s black and white boom comics, and I feel like this is the apex of both of those worlds.
Very much inspired by Faust in terms of subject matter and shock value or whatever, gore factor, but also other stuff like James O'Barr's Crow and, frankly, even Eastman and Laird's kind of rough aesthetic with duotone in the Black and White Mirage Studios Turtles comics.
Well done. Way to bring that back on point. Before we dive into these, I want to give a shout out to Octobrion in 1976, my Blacklight comic book. The Kickstarter is over, but now you can pre-order it through the Kickstarter page or through your local comic shop. So that is moving forward at a rapid pace. I sent all of my files to the printer this past week, and man, I couldn't be more excited to see this thing come back. So hop on the pre-orders for that right now, Octobrion in 1976.
So what do we got right here, man?
All right, Ed. This is something I had been looking for a while. This is the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze movie adaptations. There are two versions. One is like the newsstand released Archie edition, and one is the Tundra edition. So Kevin Eastman putting this out through his imprint. I was thinking it was Mirage, and you know, until I started prepping and saw the Tundra, but it's that time period, and we're going to see some significant differences, even though the line art is essentially the same for both versions. So this is in line with some of the videos we've made comparing maybe the same script by two different artists. We're going to see some differences here and point those out, starting with the cover. So this is a Jim Lawson cover here. This is the same cover concept, but painted over. So you can see, even from the beginning, these are sort of like the bizarro versions of one another.
I think about some of the conversations we've had, like even back in the podcast days, man, when we're talking with Jeff Smith about his collections, the cartoon books collections of Bone, and when he started to make deals with Scholastic, he was still able to publish some of his own stuff. And this is kind of like what we're dealing with here, man. Like the Bone Bible, you know, like the giant complete all 40 however many issues in one book. Scholastic asked him, like, well, how many of those things do you sell? And he's like, well, we sold about 250,000 of them so far. And they're like, oh, that's nothing. You could keep those publishing rights. Like, we don't need that. And clearly a deal was made where Archie was like the last kind of comics that you could find, you know, like they would be at the cash wrap section at your grocery store, man, like at the conveyor belt, like when it's time to check out, like you could pull these comics off. So there were probably far more of these, and while making the deal, they just toss Eastman a bone. Yeah, go ahead, make your little your bougie version. And well, I've never seen this.
Well, this is exciting then, Ed. Let's dive in, because where this gets good and the reason I'm interested in it, this is your newsstand version again, and let's see who the colorist is on this.
Might not even tell you.
Yeah, it might not. Might be at the end. I hate to not give credit, so let me just quickly glance and see if that's back here. Yeah, here we go. So the coloring is Barry Grossman, the line art Jim Lawson. So Barry Grossman doing the coloring on this newsstand edition. The reason this came on my radar is this edition is colored by Richmond Lewis of Batman Year One fame. Mm-hmm. Is the way, you know, one of the most influential color comics I can think of, Batman Year One, one of my favorite color jobs ever. So anytime I have a chance to see more Richmond Lewis comics coloring, I'm excited for it. And when I learned this was Richmond Lewis, I tracked it down first. Look at the difference. I mean, some of the drawn by two different cartoonists pages aren't as different as these two pages look to me.
Yeah, for sure. Also, just like the print quality is worth noting as well. Man, we talk about dot gain when you have a more porous paper. The from the looks of this, I feel like the creative team was playing and planning out their art for Newsstand. Because look at how thin this lettering is. And it's almost too thin in many, many spots. But through trial and error, they knew that on this more porous paper, the ink would absorb a little thicker and it would spread a little bit more.
Dot gain.
And that's perfect. You know, like that's perfectly legible, as thick as any lettering you would want there to be. So like that's one thing I noticed. And even like super, super thin lines here, but they're pretty reasonable there.
It is such a different treatment, even of like, you know, distances and stuff, like background just being, this is just dropped out almost like an open panel, but not here. And so we'll go through and we'll look at a few pages for comparison's sake. I don't know that it's a slam dunk. You know, I was expecting, of course, to love the Richmond Lewis version, but I don't know that I do. Like, after I got hold of this one, the Newsstand version's pretty good. You know, the bright green for the turtles fits well. This is interesting. I'm glad to see it, but it's also kind of muddy and dull compared to, you know, the brighter four-color typical process of, like, superhero comics.
We saw on the previous page, there's like, lots of, like, blues and stuff that make up the colors. But actually, I want to point out, it's like, these are greens behind these greens, you know, and it's just, yeah, I'm not sure what the thought process was or would have been. Maybe there's a time issue.
I'm looking for the year because this is 1991 is the date on this one, and that is about 3 years after the Batman Year One coloring job.
Yeah,
you know, like I was speculating if this was like maybe a test run, you know, ramping up, trying this new style or whatever. But it's several years later, so I think Eastman's probably a fan of that coloring like I am and sought her out to do the coloring. You know, you mentioned a lot of the blues. That makes this like a night scene. It's a totally different interpretation whenever you see it in the Newsstand. Like, I mean, that's a dramatic difference. It's a change of setting.
Yeah.
Example of your fight scene, you know, kind of a generic, not too much happening. Same here, you know, it's your CMY background just alternating. I don't know if these are aimed at, you know, certainly I assume this is a younger reader that's picking up an Archie Turtles comic, and if the bright colors are associated with a younger reader, you know, maybe a little bit more exciting for them. I don't know.
That's the Archie way, you know, like they've been doing things that way for 45 years at that point. Well, why change anything? And also, these Turtles comics, they were huge on the Newsstand and sold incredibly well. So, like, there was no incentive. Plus, it's the cartoon is out. Like I think I would probably gravitate toward this. I would have this as a curiosity and just be like, that's so weird looking. Because, frankly, that was my first feelings about Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
Like, oh, this is a legendary comic, but I think I see color pencil coloring this one part. Like, what is that? What are you talking about? This is a legendary comic, and you didn't. There's that one scene where the old mayor and like his consigliere are in a sauna, and it's left white. And I'm like, and they didn't even color this panel.
You weren't into the open panels at that point.
Well, I was just like, I paid probably the most expensive comic I bought because I got the trade $12.95 or whatever. And it's like, and they didn't even color a panel.
Yeah, it's...
And that's a little kid logic.
Exactly.
You know? Like, this is comics, and then this is like, I don't know, this is adult shit.
Yeah, I don't know that it's bad. You know, I wouldn't say that one is bad, but it is a very different interpretation. And I wonder, like, what kind of instructions Richmond Lewis had for this kind of stuff. You know, from Eastman or from the studio, whoever was responsible for putting this together, I'm curious what the direction was, you know, versus Archie doing what I think Archie does. This seems typical to the other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Archie comics I've seen.
Yeah.
It's in line with them. But I wonder what this is, because I don't even know that this resembles the movie exactly in, you know, in terms of color palette and stuff. You know, it's not a particularly dreary color palette. One of the differences that you know, you'll see, we'll go through a couple...
I mean, is there a page with Vanilla Ice?
Yeah, let's skip ahead. One other difference in these is there are like four full page splash pages inserted in this version, you know, in the Richmond Lewis, the Tundra version. I don't know if it's to make it kind of a square bound, you know, certain number of pages, or because there aren't ads, like there might be in the Archie adaptation, but there are like four more of these deluxe splash pages, which, you know, kind of cool. It throws off the left and right though, as we're about to see. So here's a comparison of a couple of the pages with your ninja wrap. And you'll see this is a left-hand page in the Archie and a right-hand page in the Tundra. I actually like this scene, and it kind of reminds me of some of the, I don't know, mid-20-teens graphic novels that would start to insert like spot colors and things that are brighter. But this is a club scene, and I think that here you see Richmond Lewis colors this whole scene as if it's, you know, the lights in the club. And I think it stands out, you know, like this looks like it's after hours or they turned on the lights or something in the club, whereas here it's kind of like nightclub. But I still don't know that this is a lot better, you know, like the ninja rap part stands out much better to me here. The, you know, the words, kind of bluish purple on purple.
The color palette reminds me of some of the weird stuff that Chester Brown would try to do with like the covers for... for Yummy Furs. Like I don't know which issues I'm specifically thinking of, but he would marry these like poppy like reds and purples.
Another dramatic difference, you know, comparison between those two pages. I do like the way Richmond Lewis approaches scenes. Like she definitely establishes a palette for each scene as we get into scene, you know, from scene to scene through this adaptation, and I think that's very effective, especially for creating a sense of we've changed locations, especially, you know, if there's not much of a background or if it happens mid-spread or something like that. It's a pretty effective strategy, definitely better at denoting things like night and day and interior and exterior. But man, is it different. You know, like whenever I started looking for both of these editions, I did not expect it to be this different from one to the other. Pretty cool, man. I do like this kind of stuff. I do think it illustrates how significant coloring really is in these comics. You know, I think today we understand that more. You know, coloring's definitely taken over a bigger part of how we see comics. But in 1991, you know, this is before Image Comics shows up and everybody's doing digital coloring on coated paper. Right. So this would be pretty way ahead of its time in 1991. You know, it still feels a little ahead of its time now comparing the two.
Yeah, like the simple line work, like there's the structure of Lawson's characters. It's not all there, you know, like, and I'm not like compared to say the simple line work of like a Bruce Timm, and you take a look at the structure of those characters, like it's very, very sound. Like this is more Play-Doh, you know? So like when she's doing this modeling with the yeah. color, like she's really got to try to figure out what shapes he has in mind when he's drawing these characters.
Some of this stuff I find beautiful, like just the purple and the red. I don't know if that's a better panel. I don't know if it's more clear, but just in terms of like that purple red to me works really well. The light blue and purple work really well. But things to think about, you know, and if you're coloring your own work, even if you're working with a colorist, but you're kind of, you know, working closely together collaboratively, these are things that, you know, you have to go through this process of making these choices. So I love seeing somebody of Richmond Lewis's caliber, you know, getting to see like some of that, I don't know about thought process, but choices certainly that she's making as she puts these pages together. And I do like the nightclub scene, I think, is some of my favorite coloring of hers in this adaptation. And this is another example of one of the like added splash pages. And again, I think it has to be just for pagination that they put these things in because, you know, that's your next page in the Archie version. Leave it with this one.
Yeah.
One last cool dramatic shot of the turtles. We're behind them. They're lit from the front a little bit, so you get to see just their outlines.
Hey, come on, man. This is fucking cartoonist kayfabe. That's the Super Shredder who is played by Kevin Nash.
Perfect. Yes. All right. Any other thoughts, Ed, on turtles coloring then and now?
No, super cool to give it a glance. Like, you know, who knew that the world needed two versions of this movie adaptation? Obviously, this one was probably more of a hit in the comic shops, and who right. knows, like the Archie comics were dismissed. Like, I can't think of really being in comic shops and seeing much Archie comics. They sort of put those away, and sort of knowing that audience for that is probably cannibalized mostly by supermarket, you know, moms who are buying that stuff. So you don't need to have those necessarily on tap, at least back in these days, man, at the comic store. So cool to see both versions, man.
I love these kinds of oddities. You know, I feel like comics history is full of this kind of stuff. These little, I don't know, variations, little weird experiments and things. Pretty cool that somebody like Richmond Lewis is involved, and it's great to see it on the Turtles.
Yeah, agreed.
It's an excuse to dive into a few more Turtles comics, and I am always down with that. And it actually kind of whets my appetite to look for more of these Archie Turtles comics, because I do like what I see in this one.
There are good ones, you know. Like after we did the Steve Bissett shoot-in review, there was a comic or two. Maybe it's like a source book. You remember the source books of the 90s with, you know, half dozen Steve Bissett drawings of, like, the characters were from, like, you know, season 6 of the toys, you know, like Mondo Gecko and shit, drawn by Steve Bissett. Who knew, you know? Like,
so weird.
We know what we know, you know? Like, we know plenty, but for everything we know about Manners 5 things, we don't.
That's the thing. Like, there might be 100 of these Archie comics. At least one of them is drawn by Gene Colan. So, like, you know, it's a piece of comics history that I know next to nothing about. You know, speaking of knowing what we don't know, but something I wouldn't mind giving a closer look for. But you mentioned kids buying these things up. The result of that is they don't survive. You right. don't see a lot of these, you know, in the back issue bins. I rarely see Archie Turtles.
Dude, when these things were coming out and you would go to the Rite Aid or, you know, the 7-Eleven to pick them up, because they were thumbed through so much, it would be this exact quality.
Yes,
like,
I know
on
what
the
you
spinner
mean.
Rack, man. Like, this might be a pristine compared to, like, when the person bought it, because kids, you know, it's 4-year-olds picking them shit, oh, Turtles, and just leaving them all dog-eared and fucked up.
It's so true. All right, well, that's all I have to say on the comparison of these two, but one of those interesting oddities, if this tickles your fancy, I would say track these down. Not too expensive, these books. At least they weren't whenever I was putting them together.
Quick, before we get out of here, man, patreon.com/edpiskor. You'll be able to read the Red Room strips. A few pages go up every Tuesday, and then throughout the week I scatter little other behind-the-scenes pieces.
You can find Octobrion, a 1976 Blacklight comic book, is available now for pre-order through the Kickstarter page or through your local comic shop. So let them know it's coming out.
Yes, and in order to get some of the comics that we talk about cheaply, you need to subscribe to the channel and hit the bell so that we can notify you when the videos are available to kind of mitigate against that kayfabe effect whenever our viewers start to buy up all the cheap copies of, say, Dragon Chang or the TMNT Secret of the Ooze adaptation off of eBay. You know, hit that bell and we'll be able to deliver those videos to you through your email or whatever.
You can subscribe to the Cartoonist Kayfabe e-newsletter at the links below the video to keep up with literally everything we're doing. And you can pick up Cartoonist Kayfabe merch and t-shirts at the links below this video.
I need to take another look at this interpretation of the Vanilla Ice on that stage, man, and compare it with his movie persona in that flick of same, man. Give him the marching orders, dude.
Read more comics.